Welcome back to Shattering Myths. In our third hour, I'd like to transition to our critique of Pauline doctrine, particularly our review of Paul's first letter, that to the Galatians. It is destroyed, actually, by Paul's testimony to Luke, as recorded in Acts. Paul claimed, if you recall, and Larry is still with us here, in Galatians 1:17, that he did not go to Jerusalem, and he instead withdrew to Arabia, and then returned to Damascus after the spending 3 years. And I guess it must have been relativity that he experienced at in Arabia, because his Acts testimony have him playing Moses and being whisked out of harm's way in a basket. So you know, it has him immediately confronting Jews immediately trying to kill him in Damascus, and those dastardly Jews, who, by the way, would have had no influence, nor any desire to kill him in Damascus, none. Jews didn't even have any influence at the time in Jerusalem, much less in Damascus. And yet he has them as a formidable foe that would have killed him had his disciples not gotten wind of the plot and escorted him out of town in a fetal position in a basket.
You know what I think? I think Paul was consistently on the run, just like we were told in Chabawook that he would be. Because right. There were people who knew the truth about Paul. And yeah. He was constantly afraid of being confronted by the truth. So if anybody who knew the truth was going to confront him or he found out about that, I think he ran.
I think it's the same scenario as we have in Islam. You know, Muhammad got virtually all of his Quran from rabbis who recited the Talmud to him. And then Muhammad didn't have a very good memory. He was illiterate, so he couldn't write any of it down. And he screwed it all up. And he twisted it then to serve his personal agenda. But everything in the Quran that sounds credible is a bastardization of the Talmud. And so when Jews began to laugh at him for convincing the ignorant Arabs in Yathrib of the fact that he was receiving, or the idea, that notion, he was receiving these from Allah, when the rabbis knew that his Quran siras were nothing more than bastardized, poorly remembered accounts of what they had read to him and that he had paid for by his own Quranic admission.
Why do you charge the prophet so much?
Why do you charge the prophet so much?
Paying for information.
Right.
Wow.
Right. And then why are you changing your Talmud when I recite it, and according to his memory? And then they said, that's not what we read to you. This is what we read to you. And they said, so Muhammad blamed them of changing their scriptures when they were now in conflict with his recital of them. And so, since the Jews could prove absolutely through written material that they had recited the Talmud to him, which was a written document, the Babylonian Talmud was composed in writing in around 500 CE. And so they had written proof that Muhammad was plagiarizing their Talmud and claiming that the recitals were from a stone god in Mecca called Allah, and so they had to die. They had to become an enemy. They had to be silenced. They had to die because they could prove that Muhammad was a complete and utter fraud. In fact, anyone who is informed and rational can prove that Muhammad is a complete fraud. So Muhammad created his religion in such a way that it attacked the original purveyors of truth, the Jews, and then attacks all others. Paul did the same thing. You know, Paul claimed that his venue was the Gentiles because they knew nothing of Yahweh. They knew nothing of the Torah. Therefore, he could make all sorts of erroneous claims, and they were none the wiser. And yet, even most of them ended up rejecting him. But with the Jews, they not only rejected him, they mocked him. Because they knew that what he was saying, he was claiming to speak for the God of the Torah when contradicting the God of the Torah. And they knew it. They mocked him. And so, from Paul's point of view, they had to die. And that's why Pauline Christianity is so anti-Semitic. It's really not more complicated than that. Sad, but not more complicated. So here's the, you know, we began the kind of the last review of Galatians with Paul's claim that this is Galatians 1:17, I did not ascend into Jerusalem towards the goal of being with or against the apostles before me. But to the contrary, I went away, withdrawing to Arabia and returned again to Damascus, 1:17. Now, when you compare that to what Paul claimed and the historical account presented by Luke, based entirely on Paul's testimony, what happened in Damascus immediately after he was blinded by his spirit on the road to Damascus, is that he stayed in Damascus. And then he escaped, but he escaped not to Arabia to go off on his journeys. You know, it's another thing that's just odd to me is that we're constantly told in the eyewitness accounts of Yahusha providing sight to the blind. And yet the spirit that Paul encountered took a sighted man and blinded him.
Yeah, you know, that's an irony there. Wow, I never really thought of that, but you're right. You're right.
Yeah,
you're right.
You know, and
well, this proves something.
Yahusha was,
you know,
yeah, Yahusha was into nourishing those who listened to him. He provided food for them, you know, fish and loaves of bread, and he uplifted them. And what did the dark spirit do to Paul? The flashing light along the road to Damascus, didn't it beat him to the point where he needed to be nurtured back to health?
See, yeah, that's his claim. Yep.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, that it took weeks to recover because he was so beaten by this spirit. It's
well, that's a loving spirit, isn't it?
Oh, that it's the same spirit like that, of course, encountered Muhammad. Muhammad said that he had he testifies to this in the Quran, that the spirit that he encountered did exactly the same thing, that beat him almost to the point of death, that was so malevolent that that he tried to commit suicide afterwards, and he had to run home to his wife to say, you know, help me, I've been possessed. Exactly the same kind
of
encounter.
What it sounds like. It sounds like a demon possession. You know, it sounds like something straight out of a Hollywood movie somewhere.
Yeah. Right. So if you're a Christian and you're following a religion where half of your New Testament was written by this man who is clearly, obviously lying to you, you need to pause a moment. Think about it. You know, if you're a Christian, the fate of your soul hinges upon your ability to process what we're talking about. We're laughing about it. You ought not be. You don't think for a moment that as a Christian, your religion is based on Jesus Christ. I mean, first of all, there was no Jesus Christ. And second of all, the actual individual was Torah observant. He was Torah supportive. He lived the Torah.
Yeah, or he couldn't have been the Messiah. That's what he said. He's the living existence of the Torah. The Torah flowed from his lips. You know, I mean, that was what made him the Messiah. You know?
Even before he was challenged, even before Paul would write that the Torah no longer is valid, that the Torah can't save, Yahusha in his first public declaration underscored the merits of the Torah, saying that it was going to stay intact and to don't think for a moment that he came to annul the Torah. And so, you know, if you're a Christian, you're living a lie. You're living a religion that's based on the antithesis of what Yosha said and did. And the actual individual, Yosha, that has had his name changed and corrupted to Jesus Christ, is not a religious founder.
And his nature changed as well. I mean, through all the copy edits, because we can put verses side by side. They do not read the same. Yao Kanan credits the existence of Yahusha with the acceptance of the Torah. Mm-hmm. And yet, if you look in the book named after the sun goddess Biblio, it'll say, it won't say the word Torah, it'll say law. It'll say the law was given to Moshe, but truth and grace, another pagan god, goddess,
right,
came by way of Jesus Christ. They don't read right. remotely the
now,
same.
And think of this for a moment. Is Jesus or Christ written out in any of the first, second, or third century Greek manuscripts?
No. They used placeholders, and it was Masia, and it was Yahusha. Almost
correct.
Primarily,
Those when you read Jesus Christ, that's not a translation. That's a copy of it.
No.
You're claiming this is
like
the inerrant word
you
of
Mary.
God, and yet you're changing it to suit your religion. And the second there, this is a pretty esoteric concept, and I know that your interest in Greek is about refined as mine is, because we both love Hebrew. But do you know the actual Greek word that has been changed to law? You know what the Greek word is?
Nomos. Yeah.
Correct. Yeah, nomos. And do you know where
that's
nomos is?
That's a covenant, something that's growing, so it's not law.
Right. Yeah, actually, the basis of the Greek word speaks of that which is nurturing and provides an inheritance. So it's speaking of the
Torah.
Purpose of the Torah, which is to provide the path to the covenant so that we can inherit what Yahweh has to offer as his children. So it happens to be a pretty good word. But do you know where the word nomos is was first introduced to the parlance of the Greeks?
No.
In the Septuagint. Every time the Hebrew text says Torah, the Septuagint reads nomos. So there's no justification for changing nomos to law. It's Torah. We'll be back. Paul will self-inflict 1,000 additional self-incriminating lashes to his credibility. This singular stroke of his claim to have spent 3 years in Arabia was more than sufficient to undermine everything he had to say. And there is only one reason that Paul would lie about his calling and preparation. He was perpetuating a fraud. Here is the passages of Galatians in this particular segment of Galatians 1:11 through 17. He says, "But nevertheless, I profess and reveal to you, brothers, of the beneficial message which, having been communicated advantageously by and through myself, because it is not in accord with man." Now, it's interesting, of course, that Yahweh chooses men to reveal his testimony. In fact, Devarim happens to be a group of Moshe's presentations to the children of Yisrael. Yahweh rather likes to communicate through men, but with Paul, no, that's just not the case. And of course, you couldn't have Yosha reveal the beneficial message. You couldn't have Moshe reveal the beneficial message. You can't have Isaiah reveal the beneficial message. You can't have Dod, Yahweh's favorite person in the world, who happened to be a man, by the way, reveal the beneficial message. No, it had to be advantageously revealed by and through myself, because it's not in accord with man.
That's interesting, because in 2 Peter, Shimon starts out by saying that Paul speaks with human understanding. Wasn't there a head of a church that said Second Peter mm-hmm. couldn't be scripture because he said that? Yeah. Which guy was that? Which founder
Calvin,
of what religion?
Calvin, the
Presbyterian.
Calvin, the Presbyterian sect of Christianity is Calvin, and Calvin wanted Second Peter struck from the canon because Christianity is based entirely on Pauline doctrine, and he knew that Peter, Shimon, absolutely annihilated Paul's credibility. You know, what's funny, too, is in that same passage, Larry, is where Christians will claim that Paul's letters are scripture because of just horrible translations out of context. So it happens to be a statement where Paul is saying, listen, in his letter to the Galatians, and indeed in all of Paul's letters, he uses circular reasoning. He speaks of the thoughts of man and not of God, and his presentation you need to be wary of because it will not only lead you astray but towards damnation. Don't listen to him, and you know that's the context. In the midst of that, they said, but he called Paul's letter scripture.
Yeah, right. He said, don't read them because they're damning. That's what he said.
You know, but, you know, that's the religious individual. You know, a religious individual will read Paul's letters to the Corinthians, and even though they conclude with Paul's imaginary voyage to the seven heavens, just like Muhammad, and with him admitting that he is demon-possessed, they'll pass right over it. They'll read and they'll do sermons on what was the thorn in Paul's side and take it from context where Paul admits what the goat in his side was. It was a demon from Satan.
Yeah, I like the way they kind of stop. You know, I had one. I shared that. I think it's Papyrus 72, if I'm not mistaken. Uh-huh. With the oldest we have is Shimon, and put it up there. And
right.
And I said, now look, this is human understanding, and a Paulette that she knows Yahweh's name, but she's another one of these dancers for Paul. Said, but stop right here. You know, where he says, you know, for people that are malleable and uneducated, these could throw them off, you know.
Right.
like somehow an educated person, it wouldn't. Well, of course, an educated person would know he's a fraud.
That's right. Yes, only Pauline doctrine only misleads those who are malleable and who are lacking understanding. So if you don't know the Torah, it's very easy for Pauline Christianity to lead you astray. If you know the Torah and you're rational, Pauline doctrine can't lead you astray because it's so obviously wrong. So it can only influence the malleable and the ignorant. The nature of religion, it preys on the malleable and the ignorant. It is a sad state of affairs, what people have accepted as the truth, particularly in light of how powerful, how genuine, how dependable, how generous the truth actually is. The lie should not have been received. Paul went on to write, "But neither because I, by man, associating myself with it, nor was I taught or instructed as a disciple, but to the contrary, by way of a revelation and appearance, serving to uncover and unveil Iesu Christu." So, Larry, I want to ask you a couple of questions here. What did Yosha call those that he taught the Torah? Disciple, right?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, he used a Hebrew word, but the Greek word is transliterated disciple. Do you know what the Hebrew and the Greek word mean? What is a disciple?
A person who follows the teachings of another, right?
Yes, one who is taught. Mm-hmm. One who is taught. So Paul is saying that he was not a disciple. So Yosha picked 12 fellas to be his disciples, those he could teach. You know, Torah means teaching after all. And so the living manifestation of the teaching of the Torah picked 12 fellows that he could teach, which he called disciples, which means those who were taught. And yet Paul blathers out, "Nor was I instructed as a disciple."
Wow. So he just kind of told on himself there, didn't he?
Yeah, he sure did. "To the contrary, by way of a revelation, an appearance serving to uncover and unveil Iesu Christu." What did Yosha say about someone who claimed to see him?
He said, don't listen to that person. He'd be a liar.
So what did Paul just claim here?
Well, he claimed that he saw him. You know, I brought that up to a fellow one time, and he told me, well, I brought it up more than once, but once a guy came back, he said, "I know what happened there. God was sitting there on his throne, and he stood up when he saw what a great man that Paul was."
Now,
changed everything
that
minute.
Okay. All right, so forget
he made
about
himself a liar for Paul.
Okay, so what the individual doesn't want to address is what Paul just testified here to. Yosha said to his disciples that if anyone claims to have seen me, they would be a liar. Do not follow him. Do not go after him. And
yeah,
Paul
right,
just claims
Matthew,
to
24,
have seen
25,
him.
26. Look, I've told you this beforehand. Forewarning you. So this is a warning about a particular person. It's a warning.
Right. Right.
And if and when someone says to you, "Look, indeed, he exists in the wilderness. Behold, do not leave your place in the treasured inner room of the home. You should not trust him." The only person that made that claim that I'm aware of is Paul.
That's it. That's it. Yep. And it's the only person that made the claim within the lifetimes of the disciples, the only person whose basis of his entire testimony was on that particular claim. All of Pauline doctrine is based on that claim. And here is Yosha warning his disciples. So either Yosha was stupid and he didn't know what was going to happen. Either he wasn't a prophet and couldn't predict what was going to happen. Either he was wasting his time talking about nonsense and none of this was important. Or this was something vitally important for us to know, for them to know about somebody who would make this claim and based a doctrine on that claim that would mislead. And mislead many. And only one person fits that bill. This very man who just admitted to it.
You know, it's not even just, you know, the fact that a guy would come out and lie and try to build a religion and a following and enrich himself, which is what Paul tried to do. It's further, you know, Marcion takes Paul's letters and then Luke, Paul's historian, some of his writings, and throws them all in a book and says, "This is a New Testament. Pay no attention to what God said." And throws what he takes the covenant writings, calls them out of vogue, and throws them aside and says, "This is our New Testament." How stupid does a person have to be to believe that a bunch of letters put in a book from a man somehow overthrows the words of the Creator himself? Because that's essentially what's going on here.
That's not essentially. It's all that's going on here. Now, going back to the individual that you encountered, they were unable to deal with the fact that there is no scenario by which Pauline Christianity can be true based upon what Yosha told the disciples in the Olivet Discourse, which is recorded there in Matthew. You read it. There is no way to square Pauline Christianity to make it valid based upon what Yosha said. So what that person did is he changed the subject. And rather than dealing with what Yosha said, he now has God getting up off of his throne, noticing what a great man Paul is. And so God himself is going to stand up in recognition as to how great a man that Paul is. Now, at the time, what was Paul doing?
He was in rabbi school.
At the time, he was in rabbi school. He had flunked out of rabbi school. And
he was tent making, wasn't he? He was a tent maker.
He was a tent maker, but he was recalled from tent making, he claims, by the rabbis, and by his own testimony, was out incarcerating, bludgeoning, and murdering followers of the way.
That's what he was doing. That's exactly what he's doing. You're right. I mean, it's been a long time since I paid attention to what Paul was doing. He was a murderer.
Right, on the road to Damascus, by Paul's own testimony, he was on the road to Damascus because he was incarcerating, bludgeoning, and murdering followers of the way.
Yeah,
and
that's right.
You want to tell me that the creator of the universe stood up off of his throne to say, that's a great man.
Yeah, well, that's what their position is, clearly, you know. And that's insane, of course.
It's insane.
That'd be like the Jews holding up Hitler as a great man or something. I mean, it's just bizarre. It's bizarre.
It is bizarre. This goes on to say, "For because indeed you heard of my wayward behavior in some time and place in the practice of Judaism, namely, that because throughout showing superiority, surpassing any measure of restraint to an extraordinary degree and better than anyone else, I was aggressively and intensely pursuing, prosecuting, oppressing, and harassing the called out of God. And I was devastating her, continuing to undermine, to overthrow, and annihilate her." So there's Paul's own admission. That's what he was doing. He was overtly religious, and Yosha spent most of his time condemning those who were religious. And he was murderous. That's what annihilate means. He was murderous. And so this is the guy that God's going to say, yeah, that's my messenger. That's the guy I want to speak for me.
Yeah, he was there at the stoning of Stephen. Let's get behind him.
Reminds me of the Muhammad, where Muslims are told in the Quran that Muhammad's the best example and that God chose Muhammad to be his last prophet, and yet Muhammad was a pedophile. He was a rapist. He was a slave trader. He was a kidnapper. He was an avowed liar. He was a mass murderer. And so this pervert is the person that God said, yep, that's my guy. The same thing's true for
Paul.
Come on.
I'm struck by the insanity of it all.
It's
I know.
So here's Paul claiming that he was being religious and he was against God, and that's why God chose him. "And so I was and continue to progress, accomplishing a great deal. And I persist moving forward in the practice of Judaism, over and beyond many contemporaries among my race, excessively and overabundantly enthusiastic, zealous and excited, devoted and burning with passion, vehement."
Why do you think he got thrown out of rabbi school?
"To the traditions and teachings of my fathers." Because Paul's presentation of rabbinic Judaism is that it's enraged, that it's hateful, that it's spiteful, that it's murderous.
Yeah.
So that's what he says.
Yeah.
You know, I was a perfect religious Jew, and that's why I was so murderous. That's why I was so enraged and hateful and hurtful. In reality, Judaism is a very passive religion. You know, Jews go out of their way not to antagonize. All they want is they want every racial Jew to adhere to their influence. But when a racial Jew speaks out against them, they will tongue lash them. But Jews are inherently nonviolent. You really got to look at the case of Israel. You've really got to yank their chain. You've got to kill a lot of them. You've got to terrorize them before they're going to respond. You've got to declare war on them and invade them before they're going to respond. They're inherently passive. And so if you have a religion that's inherently passive and you've got a guy that's studying in that religion that's enraged, that's crude, that's physically assaulting. He doesn't fit.
Yeah, he was a bully. There's no doubt about that.
I think he was thrown out of rabbinical school because he was so belligerent. He doesn't fit the profile. Rabbinical Jews can be acidic with their words. They can be biting with their testimony. They're lost souls for sure, but very few rabbis are violent. Paul was describing himself as violent, murderous, aggressive, hurtful. That's just not the nature of Judaism.
According to the one of the disciples of Shimon, I'm not sure what his real name is, but in what we have of him is in the Clement homilies, and he's called Clement. Mm-hmm. Supposedly, in his writings, it's not supposedly. I've read them. He says that Jacob was grabbed by Paul and thrown down a flight of stairs. And I think this was after he got demoted at the Jerusalem summit, and he literally tried to murder Jacob. I mean,
if you look at Paul's letter to the Galatians, he condemns Shimon. You know, there's two disciples that Yosha endeared himself to beyond all measure. And one of them was Shimon Kephish, known as Peter. And yet, in the letter to the Galatians, Paul will condemn him. So that testimony from Clement fits with what we read from Paul's own hand. This was an extraordinarily evil man, and yet he's the author of half of the Christian New Testament. It is also interesting that Paul admits that his burning passion, his enthusiastic and zealous excitement was not for the Torah, wasn't for the prophets, wasn't for the Psalms. No, his enthusiasm was to belong to the traditions handed down by what he said was my forefathers. His enthusiasm
the very people was that Yahweh condemned. The very people Yahweh condemned. I've got to ask myself, and if you're a Christian listening to this, you should ask yourself, why did they put Luke in this canon since he was just Paul's historian? Yet a person who was walking with Shimon, who was there, like Clement, they did not. And I want to read this little part out of the Clement homilies, and this is Shimon asking Shaul all of this. Why did our teacher...
This is written in the first century.
Yes.
What you're reading here was written in the first century.
And this is old stuff. Why did our teacher abide and discourse a whole year to those of us who were awake? And how is it we are to believe your word when you tell us that he appeared to you? And how did he appear to you when you entertain opinions contrary to his teaching? But if you were seen and taught by him and became an apostle for a single hour, proclaim his utterances. Interpret his sayings, love his apostles, contend not with me who companied with him, for in direct opposition to me who am rock, so this is clearly Shimon talking, the foundation of the ecclesia, you now stand. If you were not opposed to me, you would not accuse me and revile the truth proclaimed by me in order that I may not be believed when I state that I myself have heard with my own ears from Yahweh, as I were evidently a person that was condemned and in bad repute. Now he's talking to Paul here.
Paul's letter to Galatians, where Paul condemns Shimon the rock in that letter.
Right. That's why I'm reading this. It is outrageous. Yes. To say that somebody who was there walking with Peter, Shimon, with him, who was there, actually wrote this, and they decided they weren't going to put that in the canon, but they would put Luke's writings in the canon, a guy who wasn't even there.
Right.
That's insane.
and you know, here he correctly assesses the situation. That, you know, if you claim that you've seen him and that he had a revelation to you, then why don't you proclaim his utterances? Do you know how many times Paul quotes the Christian Jesus?
None. Zero.
None.
Never.
Zero.
None.
Yeah, that's what
he's
saying.
Happen.
They're saying, these other guys are saying, listen, we quote him all the time. We explain what he said all the time. We interpret what he said. You never once quote him. If you had all these meetings with him, if you claim to have seen him, if he's the one that taught you, Why don't you quote something from him?
He ends that by saying, but if indeed you really wish to work in the cause of truth, learn first from all of us and that what we have learned from him and become a disciple of the truth, become a fellow worker with us. Now, he's telling him, you're way outside the bounds. If you want to learn from us, we're willing to teach you. And yet this writing isn't in the canons. It isn't in the canons because it clearly shows who Paul was. And later, he says, and when the matters were at the point they all came to be baptized, and Paul and his men entered the temple, Paul cried out, O men of Israel, why are you so easily influenced by these miserable men? These miserable men were the disciples. He began to excite the people, raise tumult, and drive all into confusion, shouting, and to undo what was done by Jacob. Paul rebuked the priests for having listened to Jacob, and like a madman began to excite the priests and the people to murder Jacob. And the brethren saying, do not hesitate them, grab and pull them to pieces. Paul then seizing a strong brand from the altar, set the example of smiting. Then others also seeing him joined in on the beating. Much blood was shed. Although Jacob and the brethren were more numerous and more powerful, they rather suffered themselves to be killed by an inferior force than to kill others. Paul attacked Jacob, threw him headlong from the top of the steps, and supposing him dead, left him there. Now that's Clement talking about what Paul did to Jacob.
Yep.
Wow.
It's stunning. It is stunning. But you know, as sad as it is that is not read by many, the fact is you don't even need that to know for certain that Paul was a false, demon-possessed madman. His own words convict him. When you set his testimony against the Torah, Paul's the liar. We'll be back tomorrow.